All right. Good morning, everybody. It is Tuesday, March 1st. Happy 1st of March, 11:10 a.m. And we're doing Chem 12A. All right. So today, Tuesday. I'm going to get the exam up later on today. That'll give you guys through the weekend to be able to complete the exam. You've got some other assignments that we're working on. Some people had asked about some help with getting some networking going in order to do the co-ops to work together. So I think what I'm going to do is within the Canvas shell, I think I'm going to put a discussion group as well. And that discussion group can help us maybe make some connections. People can share some information back and forth and get working together. And I might explore putting together a Discord channel. I haven't tried making my own Discord channel before, but I've had many students that have done that. They've included me on the Discord. Maybe we can get a Discord going where people might feel more comfortable sharing information or talking away from Canvas and setting up some networking that way. So a couple of ideas there in getting people together. Let's see, what else do we have? I think that's about it for updates. Let's get started where we left off. So we were talking where we left off on the last, we were in the alkane chapter and we were doing some isomer work. And so I think I wanted to just give you a few more ideas about isomers, particularly about how to do isomers, because that's one of the things that I'm going to ask you to do on the exam. We did a little bit of isomer work before in the beginning of the class. I just want to do a little bit more and formalize it a little bit more right now. So let me do a screen share, otherwise you won't be able to see what I'm doing here. Let's see if I can get it up and running. All right, bingo. So we're in alkanes and I wanna pick up with isomers. And the isomers, as we've said before, are molecules that, well, there's many different types of isomers. So maybe I should just highlight that really quick too, in terms of the different types of isomers. That we can have structural isomers. And my term for that is structural. It's really geometric. Or is it structural? Oh, God, now I'm going to lose the name for it. Hang on a second. And that name is not going to come back into my head. Constitutional. And then we have geometric. Geometric falls into a lot of different types of isomers. Constitutional isomers, they have a number of different names that they use for constitutional isomers as well, but constitutional isomers really have the same molecular formula. They have a different atom connectivity. So an example might be that I have a butane versus isobutane. And these guys each have the same formula. They're each C4H10, but they have a different atom connectivity in the way that they go together. The geometric isomers get broken down into a number of different types of geometric isomers. We have enantiomers, we have diastereomers, we have cis-trans isomerization. They have the same molecular formula, they have the same atom connectivity, but they have a different spatial arrangement. And we're gonna do those later. So they have the same molecular formula, they have the same atom connectivity, but they have different spatial arrangement. which makes them not the same compound. So we can think about cis-trans isomerism is one example where they have the same molecular formula. They have the same atom connectivity. They're connected in exactly the same atoms to each other, but they have a different spatial arrangement. Another example of that is where we have different types of optical isomerism. Enantiomers is the way that we describe that. So if we have something that has four different things connected to it, I can do a hydrogen, I can do a chlorine, I could do an OH and maybe a methyl group, and I can do its mirror image. And these two cannot be overlaid on top of each other. They actually are different compounds. And so mirror images fit into that other type. These we're going to do later. What we're after are the constitutional types of isomers. That's what we're going to really focus on. So when we're looking at the constitutional types of isomers and we want to draw all the constitutional isomers for a given formula, we don't just stick with the alkanes. We can have other options beside alkanes, and that's what the co-op kind of goes into. And so one of the things to know are that units of unsaturation that we did. So I want to remind everybody the units of unsaturation. And that formula was CnH2n plus 2 for saturation. That means if the formula fits that, then the molecule will have no double bonds. It'll also have no rings. And we can extend out that formula to CnH2n plus 2 plus 1 for every nitrogen minus 1 for every halogen. So those halogens are fluoride, chloride, bromide, iodide. And that and there is no number for oxygen. Oxygen does not affect the units of unsaturation. And then what we say is that if the molecule is missing two hydrogens, that two hydrogens equals one unit of unsaturation.
Do you think you could scroll up just a little bit?
Yep.
Thank you.
Do it that way.
Perfect, thank you.
So the loss of two hydrogens equals one unit of unsaturation. And when we go through a formula and we figure out whether the formula is saturated or not, that tells us what the possibilities are. And if there needs to be double bonds or if there needs to be rings, and all of that makes for complexity in terms of figuring out how many constitutional isomers we have. So finding all the constitutional isomers, part of that is understanding what the formula is and understanding what the options are. So let's take a look at a saturated molecule, and let me show you how I would find all of the constitutional isomers for a saturated molecule. And then we can move to one example for an unsaturated molecule and show you what I might do there. All right. So let's take an example, saturated example. And let's choose a formula which is Let's do C. Oh, I don't know how many I'm going to get in here. I'm going to be in trouble because I'm making these up off the top of my head. Let's do C5, H, 11, and then let's do BR. So just to show that this fits within that saturated formula, what we should have is for CnH, 2N plus 2, plus 1 for every nitrogen, minus 1 for every halogen. And so this formula, H, is going to be 2 times 5. It's going to be plus 2, plus 0 for the nitrogen, minus 1 for the halogen. So that's going to be H, 10, plus 2, minus 1. That's going to be H, 11. And that's what we have, is we have H11. So molecule is saturated. What that means is no rings, no double bonds. So that makes the molecule easier to deal with. And when I start to find all of the different isomers, what I start off with is a series of what are called frameworks. Now, I don't think you're going to find this in the book. This is my way of working through a problem like this. And frameworks are, I take 2, 3, 4, 5. So I can have the straight chain, or I can branch the straight chain, 2, 3, 4. And I can put the fifth carbon at a branch, or I could do 2, 3, 4, 5. These are my frameworks. So by frameworks, what I mean is these are all of the linear sequence chains. And now what I can do is I can take each one of those frameworks and I can apply to it the bromide in different positions to come up with all the different isomers. But until I discern all the different frameworks, I could leave things saying I could leave things out or I could make mistakes. And so now from the frameworks, what I'll say is linear. I'll work off of 2, 3, 4, 5. I'll work off of this one, 2, 3, 4, 5 in position number 1. Put a bromide. 2, 3, 4, 5 in position number 2. Put a bromide. 2, 3, 4, 5 in position number 3. Put a bromide. This is compound 1, compound 2, compound 3. Now, I might consider in number 4, I might be just going down the line and thinking maybe what I should do is I should move the bromide over here. But the problem with this is that if we number these for nomenclature, 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, and we start off with number 1 at the place where the substituent, the bromide, sits. I do the same thing here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So I'm numbering from the right-hand side to the left-hand side. If I number this compound, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 4 and 2 are identical. And so it's a duplicate, a repeat. And I need to be careful not to do those duplicates. And so once I've gone through and I've placed the bromide in the 3 different possible positions and I start to repeat, I want to be careful not to do that. So what I have done is I've exhausted the first linear framework. And it's time for me to move on to the second branched framework. It's time for me to move on to this framework over here. So next framework, branched. And that branched framework, as I start to move through it, I'll take and I'll put the bromine in different positions. This is going to be compound number 4. I'll take and move that branch point and place the bromide there. That's compound number 5. I'll take and move it again. That's compound number 6. We'll do it again. This is compound number 7. And as I go through these, I need to check and make sure that I'm not repeating anything. One of the things that somebody might like to do is they might consider number 8 and say, okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take and I'm going to put the bromide down here off of this carbon. And it looks like it's a completely different molecule. But when we go through and number it, what we'll find is that this is number 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 connected to number 2. If I number this one, number 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, notice that the bromide is on carbon 1, bromide on 1, 5 is connected to 2, 5 is connected to 2. These two are identical. And this is not a new compound. This is a duplicate of 4. It's just in a different conformation. It's just drawn in a slightly different way. And I could make it look like number 4. All I need to do is manipulate it, and I need to take it about this axis, and I need to flip it over. And that would bring the bromide up and put number 5 down. And then you can visualize it and see that it is actually the exact same thing as number 4. It's hard to do these visually and not make mistakes. This is where the model kit comes important. That the model kit, if you build number 4 and you build number 8, and then you rotate them and you align them, you can see that they are exactly the same compound. But it takes a physical model and a rotation and an alignment to be able to see that that's the case. If you need to break a bond and move an atom to get two molecules to look the same, then the two are isomers. So here's the tip. Use a model kit and build both. If they overlap, if they can be rotated and overlap, then they are the same molecule. If you must break a bond, and reconnect, to get them to look the same, then the two are isomers. And that's really that unique part there about having to break a bond. That's what it means to be constitutional isomers, or any isomers, really. If you have to break a bond in order to reconnect them to make two molecules the same, then those two molecules started off being isomers. And so systematically, what I'm doing here, notice also what I'm doing. Notice that my framework is in a specific orientation, and I never change the orientation of my framework. That is really key. If you change the orientation of the framework, then you run the risk of making things look different and drawing duplicates that you don't realize are duplicates. But because I kept the framework the same, what I was able to do is I was able to start in one position and just move the bromide over and over and over until I got to the end of the molecule. And realizing that where two atoms are the same, that if I put the bromine at the top and the bromine at the bottom, that they are identical molecules. And so now I've exhausted this framework and I've gone through all the positions of this framework. And now it's time to do the next framework.
Jason, a quick question before you move on. What do you mean don't change the framework?
Don't draw it in a different orientation than it's drawn now.
Oh, like the basic, like don't shift like that bottom part upwards? Is that what you mean?
I mean, like if I'm drawing the framework like this, and this is how I've started, then yeah. Don't do this.
Oh, okay.
Don't draw it in a different orientation. Keep the orientation the same and don't change the orientation.
Okay, that makes sense. Thank you.
Changing orientation leads you to start making mistakes. So, and there's lots of different ways that that could happen. I mean, I could draw this thing in so many different ways. And these are all the same molecule. So once you decide on a way to draw it, be consistent. Don't change it. All right, last framework. This is also branched framework. And this one was that guy. And so this one really only has one option. And that's it. Every other way of placing that bromide onto that molecule is exactly the same. So if I take that bromide and I put it on any of these carbons that are out here, I come up with the same isomer. And I cannot put it onto the center because there are already four bonds to the center carbon. And I can't place it on the center carbon. That would be five bonds to carbon and would make an error. So if I look at it this way and I say, all right, I want to put the bromide here. This is a super error. We want to avoid that. And so this one, what number was I on? I was on 7. So this is the 8th isomer, and there are total 8 isomers. And that was for C5H11Br. Okay, so I give you a good idea now in terms of how to go through the frameworks. And it's really the identification of these frameworks that helps us to figure out what it is we want to do then and how to go through and find them systematically. So we're not just randomly, haphazardly going along and trying to find all of the frameworks. The other example that I would give of that would be an unsaturated. So let's pick I'm trying to think of a formula that I want to do here that I don't want it to get too crazy with too many. I'm going to choose C4. H, I'm going to get too many, but all right, let's give it a shot. C4H8. And let's give it a BR just to not make it crazy. Find all of the constitutional isomers. Okay, so just to check, CnH2n plus 2 plus 1 for each nitrogen minus 1 for each halogen. That is going to give us H2 times 4 plus 2 plus 0 for the nitrogen minus 1 for the halogen. So that's going to be 8, 10, 9. So that's going to be H9 is where we should be. And that's H9 if saturated. So we compare that to what we have. We compare that to the formula. And, oh, and I did do it, didn't I? Because I made it the wrong number. This should be 7. There we go. All right, and so what we do is we subtract the number of hydrogens that we have. And then we take that number, and usually I do this by numbers rather than doing it with a subscript. Divided by 2, that equals 1. This is 1 unit of unsaturation. So with 1 unit of unsaturation, 1 unit of unsaturation equals the loss of 2 hydrogens. That means that my molecule has either one ring or one double bond. And so I have to consider, when I come back to my formula, I have to consider molecules that will either have a ring or have one double bond. And I only have 4 carbons to deal with. So so we have C4H7Br. And now we need to find our frameworks and figure out what our frameworks look like. So proposed frameworks. We have 4 carbons. The 4 carbons must have a double bond in them someplace. There's one framework. There's another framework. If I were to consider geometric isomers, which I said that we weren't doing quite yet, I'd also have to consider that one. I'm going to put this in parentheses and say this is geometric. Then I go to the branched ones, and the branched ones with a double bond. So these are linear. This is branched. And then I have to consider rings. So with a ring, what you can do is you can consider a 3-membered ring and the 4th carbon, and you can consider a 4-membered ring. So there are all my frameworks, and I've exhausted the possibilities. There are no other linear structures that I can move the double bond to. There are no other branch structures that I can move the double bond to. And I've exhausted all of the ring systems. And so I have 6, if I consider that geometric, structures to consider to go through and do all the isomers for. And now I need to go through and I need to place that bromine on each one of these as frameworks and see how many isomers I can make with that bromine attached to it. So let's give that a shot, and we'll start off with the linear. You can see how this escalates really quickly. So there was my framework. We'll just check and make sure we've got the right thing. Make sure that we were at C4H7Br. And I'm going to take and put that bromine in the first position. I'll take and put that bromine in the second position. Keep the framework going. Take and put the bromine on the double bond. Take and put the bromine on the terminal end of the double bond. And then I'm going to show you one more here. This one, which this one is a geometric isomer. And so this one here is what is called trans. And this one is what is called cis. Cis being same side, trans being opposite sides. So how many did I come up with when I went through and did that? I came up with 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, if I include that geometric one, just for the linear system. So there were 5 that fit into that guy. Now I've got to go and I've got to go do this one. So next framework. And keep the orientation exactly the same. Do not change anything. Bromide on the first carbon. Bromide on the second. Now, I may want to consider just going down the line that it feels like I'm on a roll. I might as well just keep going. But what we notice is that when we go through and we number these, just as we were trying to do before, that these two molecules that I've just drawn, let's see, we were at 5, this is number 6, this is number 7, this is number 8, that if I go through and number them, 1, 2, 3, 4, bromine on 2, 1, 2, 3, 4, bromine on 2, that these two are actually the same. And this is an error. And that if I take the molecule and I rotate the molecule this way, I just flip it over that way, that would rotate this bromine into the downwards position and it would look identical to number 7. In fact, I think I can do that. Bonk, there it is. And my bromine's written upside down. But you can see how it's exactly the same as number 7, just through a rotation.
Jason, a question on the bromine. Does it matter if it's facing upwards or if it's facing downwards?
It doesn't. When you say upwards versus downwards in facing, I mean, just as I rotated this, you can see that upwards and downwards make no difference, that once the molecule is rotated, it's the same.
Okay.
And so this is not a new isomer, nor could I take and put the bromine on number 1, because that's going to be the same as number 6. And so I've exhausted all the possibilities with just 2 in that linear framework. Now, there was the other linear framework, and I could consider, as I said, there's the geometric isomer, there's this one, and I could consider from that one 2 more, where I could take and I could put the bromine on the first carbon, and I can take and I can put the bromine on the second carbon. Come on. Take your time, draw carefully. And so these would be considered to be new compounds as well. These again, though, are geometric isomers. So 6, 7, this would be 8, this would be 9. So this would be geometric. And then I've exhausted that framework, and it's time to move on to the branch and move on to this framework. So I had an additional 2, an additional 2 there. Let's see how many we get in the branched framework. So here what I can do is I can take and I can put the bromine on that carbon. I can take and I can move the bromine down. And I can put the bromine out here. And it may look like I can take and put the bromine down on the bottom, but these guys are going to be the same. It also may look like I could take and put bromine coming down this way, but then these two are the same. How can I see that? The easiest way to see that is by numbering again. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, and 3. See how the double bond is on 2 and bromine is on 1? And if I numbered it this way and I went out 1, 2, and 3, and 1, 2, and 3, methyl on 2, bromine on 1, and no difference between them. So I have an additional, that was 9, this is 10, this is number 11, and then these are errors. And I've exhausted that branched framework. Now I need to go and I need to consider the ring formats, and I have 2 different rings to consider. So in considering the rings, there's some things to be aware of with rings as well. Let's start with the 3-member cyclopropane ring with the methyl group on it. The thing to note about rings is that at first they look rather simple. We can take and we can put the bromine exterior to the ring. We can take and we can put the bromine on the same carbon with the methyl on the ring. We can take and we can move that bromine out 1 carbon away. And then as we start to try to put the bromine on the bottom carbon, we start to duplicate this system. And so this is really as far as we can go. And there are an additional 3 isomers here. So we were on number 11. This is going to be number 12, 13, and 14. And I said that there was something to be aware of with ring systems. And it's this. When you look at a ring system, the ring is actually can be considered to be flat. And as we take a look at where the substituents reside, the ring has both a top side and a bottom side. And similar to double bonds, they are subject to geometric isomerism. And so when I take and I swap one of these hydrogens in place of bromine in its place, there's two different isomers that I can draw for that. And I need to be aware of the fact that I can draw those two different isomers. One of them looks like this, where I get the CH3, the hydrogen, and the bromide in the up position, opposite from the methyl group. No, don't do that. Okay. Try to draw it that way. And the other one that I can draw looks like this, where the methyl group is down, the hydrogen is up, and now the bromide is on the downward side with it. These two are on opposite sides of the ring. This structure is what's called trans. These two, the bromide and the methyl, are on the same side of the ring, and these two are called cis. And so these are another form of geometric isomerism. So I'm trying to include a little bit of geometric isomerism as we're looking at it, as well as the constitutional isomers. Okay, so we've exhausted that one. We've got the last ring system. And the last ring system is a cyclobutane. And for this framework, there's only one. And we're done. So 14, 15. So if we go through and we look at how many there actually are, got to go all the way back up here. We had five for this system. We had two here. There were two that were additional that were geometric. There were for the branched, let's go back and look at how many we had for that branched. There were two for that branch system. There were for the ring, there were additional three, but that 14 actually counts for two. So this could be 14A, 14B. So I'm going to give you a count out that's going to show you how many there actually are total and how many are geometric and how many are constitutional. So let's say that there are three that are constitutional, but there are five if we consider geometric. And then there was only one for the cyclobutane. So in total, when we look at it in total, there were 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 that were constitutional. And then for geometric, we had an additional 2, 3, 4. So if I do that count out properly, that would be 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, plus 5, 17. 17 if we consider constitutional, if we consider geometric. So there's our numbers in terms of what we could have. And we've gone through and we've done them all now. And by far, the linears had the most. in terms of going through and being able to do all those out. But you can see with this many isomers, the fact that I'm getting 13 and 17, even with this small, tiny little formula of C4H7Br, that if you don't have a structured way of drawing these, if you don't have a structured way of going through them, you are going to run into a lot of trouble in trying to get them all without missing any or reproducing them. And so working from the frameworks and first identifying the frameworks, I think the tools are here. We'll list the tools out. Drawing isomers. Number one, units of unsaturation. Find out the possibilities. Make sure that we know that formula CnH2n plus 2 plus 1 for every nitrogen minus 1 for every halogen. Number two, draw frameworks. Number three, draw isomers from the frameworks without rotating the framework. Super important. Number four, watch for duplicates. Tools here are numbering and model kit. And that's it. That's how you go through and do it. So those are all the tools. Okay, the other skill that goes along with this, that helps with this, is nomenclature. And that's the other thing that I want to go through. And I want to go through the nomenclature for alkanes. So let's do nomenclature in the last half hour that we've got here and talk about how nomenclature works. Nomenclature is not the sexiest of topics. Nomenclature is fairly dry. It's systematic. Usually what I do is I tell you guys that you are responsible for the nomenclature. I'm going to introduce the system. I'm going to give you many examples for the alkanes. And as we go into each new functional group, alkenes, alkynes, ketones, aldehydes, that we will introduce the basics of the nomenclature system. But the system is systematic, and you can get it just by reading the book. You don't need me to hold your hand through nomenclature. I'm going to do that initially, but then once I teach you the system, all the nomenclature is systematic. It's just a matter of reading the instructions in the book and going through and systematically doing it. Not only that, computers can name molecules instantly now, and they reduce the molecule to a formula and can unambiguously identify what the name of that molecule is. And for complicated molecules, it's the easiest way to name things is to just chuck it into a computer and let a computer name it. As soon as you draw the molecule, the naming actually keeps up with the molecule as you're drawing it, which is really cool. On some applications, you can have the application showing you the name, you change a methyl, you change a branch, you add a carbon, and the whole molecule gets renamed in the appropriate name. It's also, using an application like that is a really good way of checking for isomers, because the computer doesn't care how you draw it. If you draw it in two different styles, put it in, they come up with the same name, those two compounds are identical. So isomers will always have different names. And if they're the same molecule, even if they're drawn differently, the computer's going to know and going to give it the right name. So if a computer does all that nomenclature, why do we need to then be able to name things and do things? Because we need to be able to talk about smaller molecules and use their names and be able to visualize what that molecule looks like when we say its name. It's an important component to be able to name organic molecules. And so we always do do the nomenclature. And organic nomenclature is very different than the inorganic nomenclature that you've already done. I know Chem 1B has a component where they teach you a little bit of the organic nomenclature, but they don't go into it exhaustively. And so I think it's important to understand the entire system as we go through and do it. And also understand that the system changes and has changed over time. So nomenclature. Each unique formula has a unique systematic name, and it may have one or more common names. The common names were derived from compounds that were discovered before the use of the systematic. First systematic nomenclature was proposed in 1787 for inorganic materials. 1830s, they started to do systematic nomenclature for organics. And in 1892, IUPAC was established. So when IUPAC was established, IUPAC is the International Union for Pure and Applied Chemistry. It is the governing body that does all of the nomenclature. And in 1958, the first rules were published. All of this really isn't all that important, other than to understand that the nomenclature changed over times. So in 1979, there was an update to the rules. In 1993, there was an update to the rules. In 2004, they updated the rules again. So these were all rule updates. And to show you kind of like how that changes, if we look at just a simple compound, this compound was commonly known as secbutanol. The dash is important. In 1979, the name was changed to 2-butanol. Where the 2 locates where the alcohol is. So the 2 here is the locant number 1, 2, 3, 4. The sec meant secondary carbon. And so it was on the carbon number 2 in the common nomenclature. And then in 1993, they changed the rules. And in 1993, they said, we should put the locator number in a different position. And it was changed to butan-2-all, where now the locant number is right next to the substituent location. And so there's different names that are acceptable for the molecule that can be used. This is still very commonly called 2-butanol. And it's also called butan-2-all. It's also called secbutanol. All of those names are appropriate and function. But we need to sort of understand that nomenclature and be able to identify that compound with all of the different types of nomenclature that are used for it. With the unbranched alkanes, most of you understand the IUPAC names for the unbranched alkanes, but it's worth noting really quick. So I look at the unbranched alkanes and I look at the number of carbons. We've got carbon number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. So we're going out to each one of these. We can look at CH4. We can look at ethane, propane, butane. Again, these being unbranched. Methane, ethane, propane, butane, pentane. And then we keep on going. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Come on back. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So pentane, hexane, heptane, octane, nonane, and decane. These guys here, as we underline meth, eth, prop, bute, pent, hex, hept, oct, non, and dec, those become the prefixes that tell us the number of carbons that are in a molecule. The suffix, the ane part, is the suffix. That tells us the family. It's family or functional group. And we can go on from there so that we can go 11 through 20, although we very rarely use them. And they keep going beyond 20. They go up into the hundreds. But usually, we only do nomenclature up to about 10 carbons. And so it's nice to be able to see more and to know what happens after 11. We go to undecane. Spelled that wrong. Undecane. At 12, we go to dodecane. Thirteen tridecane, fourteen tetra, fifteen pent, sixteen hex. 16. I'm going to stop at those. We don't really need to go beyond that. And we can go up to 20, which takes on icosane. But usually, that's about as far as we need to go is through 10. And we can make everything work that we need there. So when we start to go through and number molecules in order to try to give them, my pages are off here, as we try to identify how to name a molecule, these are the IUPAC rules. So the first thing that we do is we identify the longest carbon chain. Sometimes that's not as easy as it sounds. Number two, we identify substituents. Number three, we number the longest carbon chain. And we number the longest carbon chain such that the substituent at the first point of difference has the lowest possible number. Such that the substituent at first point of difference has the lowest possible number. Let's give just an example right there real quick. Let's say that we have a substituent that is sitting here. The longest carbon chain would be numbered out, and this would be 1, 2, 3, 4, such that I'm numbering out this direction, and this guy gets identified as a substituent. If I were to try to number it the other way, and I were to number out this direction, 1, 2, 3, 4, and it looks like these might be equivalent systems, and yet the substituent is here, this one places the methyl on number two, this one places the methyl on number three. And so this one would be incorrect. This is what we want. Lowest number at first point of difference. That's the key thing there. Then number four, for naming, we group identical substituents together. And locator numbers are separated by commas. And followed by a dash. The name of the group is then preceded by a prefix. And that prefix indicates the number of the group, indicating how many. And then we write the name of the compound with substituents in alphabetical order. And that is pretty much it. Almost. We've got some complex side chains and some other names that we've got to hit before, but let me show you some compounds now. So let's pick a compound and go through and do a couple of names. Examples. Let's do this molecule. All right, so I've got to go through and I've got to number this and I've got to find the longest carbon chain. And as I'm going through and finding the longest carbon chain, the longest carbon chain can be in a number of different orientations. It doesn't have to be linear. But if I start counting out, I say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It looks like there's a number of different ways that I could number this thing out and get six carbons. But no matter how I do it, it looks like I've got six carbons. And so I'm going to identify my longest carbon chain just as the linear part here. And say that this is looking like my longest carbon chain. Now, once I've identified the longest carbon chain, now I've got to number it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Or I could number it by the blue, and it could be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. So I'm going to identify my substituents on this and say that my substituents are this guy, and this guy. And I'm going to look at their locator numbers and I'm going to list out their locator numbers. So in the red, I have a methyl on 2, I have a methyl on 4, and I have a methyl on 5. And on blue, if I do blue, I have a methyl on 2, I have a methyl on 3, and I have a methyl on 5. Do you see that the first point of difference happens right here? That first point of difference between the red numbering system and the blue numbering system happens at the second position. And one of those has the lower number. The lower number is 3, and this is the proper numbering system. The blue numbering system has the lowest number at the first point of difference. And because of that, the numbering, the blue numbering system is correct. So now what I need to do is I need to use the blue numbering system, and I look at each one of those substituents, and what I have is I have 3 methyl groups. So I have 3 methyls. Okay, and we didn't say this, the substituent, what I do is I use YL for substituent. So the meth is the prefix that tells me 1 carbon. And the YL tells me that it's a substituent. So there's 3 methyls. And those methyls are on 2, 3, and 5. So what I have is I have 2, 3, 5. And then I'm going to use a prefix that tells me how many methyls. There are 3 methyls, so I use trimethyl. Mon, di, tri, tetra, penta, hexa, hepta, octa, nona, and deca. So this would, mon is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. So these are my prefixes for the substituents that tell me how many I have. So I have 3 methyls. And their locator positions. And then I have the parent chain, which is a 6-carbon parent chain. That's a hexane. And so these 3 components go together to name this molecule. It is 2, 3, 5-trimethyl, no space, hexane. And that would be the full name of the compound. Again, as I break that compound down, make sure that I draw it in the right way, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, methyl, methyl, methyl. And this is carbon number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I'm realizing I'm doing it in red, but I chose the blue system. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. And my substituents that are those methyls. There are 3 of them, and the chain, which is the hexane. And my locator positions, which are at 2, 3, and 5. Does that make it pretty clear? A little more clear in terms of how that breaks out? Let's do another one. I'm looking to make sure that this system, that should work. Okay, let me give you another example. I'm going to try to not count out as I'm doing it because I don't want to give it away. Okay, I want to name this compound. So in looking at this compound, there's a number of different ways that I could count out and number it, but it looks like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. I could go either direction. And it really doesn't matter as long as I'm hitting all 9 of those. There's 9 each direction, so it looks like it's a 9-carbon chain. So with a 9-carbon chain, one of the things that I do first is as I'm going through and doing this, this is 9 carbons. This is a nonane. And then I identify my substituents, breaking out my substituents. And in this case, I have 2 different substituents that are on here. This one is a methyl. And this one has 1, 2, 3. This is a propyl. So 3-carbon chain propyl, 1-carbon chain methyl. Figuring out how to number the system, I could number starting this direction, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Or I could number starting from left to right, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. Substituents in the blue system fall on 5 and 6. Substituents in the red system fall on 4 and 5. Which is the correct system, red or blue? It's independent of substituent. The substituent does not matter. What matters is the lowest number at first point of difference. So in this system, what happens is red is the correct numbering system because lowest number at first point of difference. So that means that I'm going to use the red numbering system. And that means that I have a 4-propyl. And I have a 5-methyl. They're based on a nonane. And I alphabetize them, LML of P, so M before P. So I'm going to put M first, and then I'm going to put P second. So as I list out these names and write it out, I'm going to get 5-methyl. Dash 4-propyl, alphabetical, followed by no space, nonane. And that would be the whole name. The only other complication in this really is what we call complex side chains. And complex side chains are branching side chains. So at complexing side chains or branch side chains, there are two ways to name them. There are some conserved common names. The common names with these have to do with the way that they're branched. This is an isopropyl, isomer of propyl. That is the side chain that we're looking at, and then the squiggly line represents the branch point, represents where it's connected to the main chain. So what I often do is do it this way, where this guy represents main chain connection. If I take and make a chain that looks like this, this is called an isobutyl. Connecting it this way is a secbutyl. Taking and making this one, this is a tert-butyl. We can do just a couple more. These aren't used as commonly. I feel like I didn't hit that one right. I need one more carbon in there. I'm going to come out straight, come down, down straight, then branch. This is an isopentyl. Okay, so where are these names coming from and how are they derived? When we look at the point here, 1, 2, and 3, iso means isomer. This is an isomer of a propyl group. So it's got 3 carbons there in the propyl, but an isomer of the propyl. This one, 1, 2, 3, and then carbon number 4. This is an isomer of a butyl. This one is a 1, 2, 3, 4, but it's attached at position number 2, and the chain is straight. Therefore, sec means secondary. Notice that iso gets no dash, but secondary does. Tert also gets a dash. Why does tert get a dash? 1, 2, 3, 4. Tert means tertiary. And I should say that tertiary, secondary are referring to the types of carbon that they're attached to. They're referring to the attachment point. This is a secondary carbon. This is a tertiary carbon. And so they're attached to the secondary carbon, they're attached to the tertiary carbon, they're attachment points. And because they're attachment points, we use a dash, whereas iso means isomer. And because iso means isomer, we don't use a dash. It's a location versus a type. And so we use the dash for location, but for type, we don't use a dash. These types, I'm going to be mindful of my time here. I'm going to go for just one more minute and then I'm going to stop. These same branching complex side chains can have a different type of nomenclature. We can name them in a different style. So if I take the branching point here, which I call isopropyl, the other way that I can name this is to number the carbons. Carbon number 1 is at the branch point. Carbon number 2 is the main chain. So this comes out as the main chain, and this guy gets substituent. And so this becomes a one methyl. And then I name the main chain ethyl. And then I put it into parentheses. And that is a 1-methyl ethyl group. Both of them get the YL ending because it's still part of a substituent. If I take some of the other ones and I do that same nomenclature style, this was the sec butyl. This one gets numbered out. Number 1, always at the branch point, out the longest carbon chain. So there's the longest carbon chain. The methyl becomes a substituent. This is a 1-methyl. And then the red part is a propyl. And then that all goes into parentheses and it becomes a 1-methylpropyl. The isobutyl group branch point always gets number 1, number 2, number 3. This guy becomes a substituent. This becomes 2-methyl. And then propyl. And that one was the sec butyl. What happened? This was the sec butyl. This was the isobutyl. There we go. So you can see how we can go through and we can create complex side chains and we can use the complex side chain nomenclature. The problem with this now becomes alphabetizing. What do we alphabetize on? When we start doing complex sidechains, alphabetization gets difficult. And these common sidechains, alphabetization gets difficult. When we alphabetize, we only alphabetize on the proper name of the sidechain. So we alphabetize these under I for ISO. But when we get to a dash, we don't alphabetize a locate number or a locant number. So we alphabetize on B. Same thing here. We alphabetize on B. We alphabetize on ISO. So alphabetization would be on ISO, butyl, ISO. And then on the complex side chains, it is the first one regardless. So whatever the first letter is in the complex side chain, that's what we alphabetize on. And the alphabetization gets a little bit tricky as we go through those, but those are the rules. And we could do a few more examples. I'm out of time, so I'm going to cut it here. But the rest of the rules really aren't all that complicated. It really is now just a matter of finding the longest carbon chain, finding your substituents, choosing whether you want to use the complex side chain or the common side chain nomenclature for the smaller side chains, and then alphabetizing them all into the name. And those are the whole rules. I don't know, any questions in terms of as we're going through it? I feel like that last part felt a little bit rushed. I think we'll do a few more examples on Thursday. And those few more examples will probably help solidify things for the exam as you're working on the exam. There is a little bit of nomenclature on the exam. It's not exhaustive or huge. But I think that's probably enough for today. All right, so a little bit more nomenclature. We'll do a couple more examples. I'll show you a few more examples on Thursday. And then we'll launch more into things with the alkanes that won't be on the exam. So it's just nomenclature is that last topic that'll be on there. And like I said, I'm going to put that exam up today. You guys can look at it. You can review lecture notes. You can go back to it. You can download it, work on it on your own time. And you'll have through the weekend to work on it to get it turned in. Okay? All right.
So Jason, when is it going to be turned in the exam?
Saturday, I think I'll be able to do Monday. I think I'll give you guys through the weekend and have it due Monday night.
Okay, that'll be really nice. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. That's it. Unless there's any other questions, I'm going to go ahead and stop the screen share. And I'll hang out here for a little bit. Otherwise, I'll see you guys tomorrow morning for those that have lab. And I'll see you on Thursday for those who don't.